going on, everybody? And thank y'all also very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, sitting here in studio, just flexing, maxing, relaxing, all shooting some b-ball, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios in a beautiful April afternoon.
Hey, you
in
look
North Texas.
Happy.
I
and
am
the
happy.
Reason I say that is because the Stars are doing well.
Well, they're not doing well. Well. They're surviving.
How about better? They're doing better.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. They lost the first two games. I was like, oh, my God. What are they doing? Yeah, no, they're back in it. So
I had
it's
to
all
talk
tied
Kyle
up.
Off the ledge.
It's all tied up. My garden's been going good. I'm excited.
Storms. Hey, everybody up there in Sulphur, Oklahoma, hearts go out to y'all. We had family that used to live in Sulphur, and they had moved away, and it got hammered by the tornadoes.
I saw people got hammered in Nebraska,
Iowa. Oh, my gosh.
It's that time of the year, folks. It is terrible. I love the rain, but man, some of them storms, it's just crazy. Mother Nature.
Yeah.
Boy, it's funny that
unrelenting.
It's funny how we think we can tame it, right? Like we got it under control. It's all an illusion, folks. It's all an illusion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mother Nature does not care about you.
No.
Just go watch Nature is Metal or whatever on Instagram. You'll know what I'm talking about.
Dude, when I see the video footage of like tsunamis, right? Like when the waves start rolling in and flooding, I panic.
I do too,
because I straight panic.
When I was younger, I was like, oh man, I'd love to live on the coast, like right on oceanfront. And now as I'm older, I'm like, there's no way.
You're like, hard no?
No, because look at that.
Yeah.
But I guess it's the people that live there all their life are seasoned to it. Like Floridians, they don't care about hurricanes. They're just like, nah, we ain't leaving.
I'm glad you're finally coming around to my side now about the ocean.
Oh, well, I'm not scared of everything in it like you are. Dude, I am scared of some of the stuff in it. It's the unknown
that's
more
frightening. That's the part that's the most terrifying.
I think aliens live in the ocean, too.
And I feel like the ocean's alive. Like that thing's a beast in and of itself. It's reaching out to grab you and pull you back in.
Yeah. If there's anywhere where there's real monsters, it's probably in the deep recesses of the ocean.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Right? Because what have we explored? Like 13% of it or something crazy?
If that much.
Because there's a lot of it that there's nothing really there. It's like a vast void.
Did I send you the thing? There was like somebody had made a meme about it, like everything else. And it was, why is NASA trying so hard to get, you know, to the other planets when they've not explored the ocean? And the comment was, well, they have. They've known enough about it that they fear it. And that's why they're trying to get away from this planet to get to other planets, is to get away from the ocean.
It's a good point.
And I'm like, there's monsters in there, man.
No, or maybe they went down there and the extraterrestrials are like, get out of here. And they're like, okay, yes, sir.
They called. We had dibs on this place first. What are y'all doing here?
Yeah, that's very
possible. I still think that Earth is like the truck stop of the universe.
Yeah.
There was an old movie with Dennis Hopper called Space Truckers.
Yeah.
You remember that old film?
Yeah.
And because it always feels like it alluded up to Spaceballs. Like there's a lot of that bleed over, like you can see. But I always think of that as like maybe Earth is like I've said before, it's just a gnarly old truck stop compared to every other cool planet around.
That's what I think Bigfoot is. Bigfoot is their pet, and they let it out to use the restroom.
And they got away?
And it got away, or it's just an unruly pet. They don't want nothing to do with it, so they just like people around here would drive out in the country and let a dog loose. They let Bigfoot loose.
I think Bigfoot is on like a sabbatical or doing a walkabout. And I think whatever like level or whatever multiverse he's on, that when they come here, it's almost like their quiet time.
Yeah,
they're
maybe.
Like monks from
like the Amish, was it Rumspringa or whatever?
Yeah,
well, they have a couple years to
and they go out here
figure out if they want to return to the flock.
Yeah, and that's kind of the way it works with the Bigfoot. Is he just, because that just explains how they just vanish, and you know they're still flesh and blood, but they can also just slip over to the other side if they want.
That's as good a theory as any other.
Can't be any wilder than any of the other stuff. I've got something pretty wild here for you, Brad.
All right,
I know you love little creepy entity encounters.
I do.
This one comes from a fella's farm, and it says, soon after my father passed away, I went to live with my friend and his mom for a little while. Things with my mom were very strained, and I didn't want to stay at my friend's house initially. But they didn't want me alone during that time, so staying at anyone's house always made me feel uneasy for some reason. So the first night there, early in the morning, I woke up to the sound of my bedroom door opening, and a gentleman wearing a red flannel and bib denim overalls came into my room holding a bag of tools. He turned the light on, looked right at me, and walked through another doorway to the utility room. Well, soon after that, I fell asleep again. And when I woke up this time, the room was dark. Everything was exactly the same as I went to sleep that night previously. So figuring that I had imagined this entire thing, I went upstairs for coffee and asked my friend's mom if the guy with the overalls was still here. Well, with a weird look, she informed me that it's been her and I in the house all night. At this point, I'm very confused, so I explain in detail what the man looked like. Height, weight, clothes, facial hair, everything. She turns pale white and bolts to her room and grabs a photo. When she showed me the photo, it was the man I saw in the basement that morning, even wearing the same clothes. She tells me that he passed away about 30 years ago, and it was her grandfather who owned the property previously. He had killed himself to save the farm when he invested his money into horses instead of machines, and his investments flopped. To keep the bank from taking the farm on a stormy night, he took a lightning rod into the middle of a pond, and nature took his life when lightning struck the rod. Because of this, life insurance paid out, and his self-inflicted death saved the family dairy business and kept the house from being foreclosed on. Thanks, Wesley.
Wow. What a genius move by the grandfather.
Right, that's a pretty slick move, right?
At first, I'm like, well, there's a lot better way of killing yourself than trying to get lightning to strike.
But paid for.
But, right.
When he gets looks like he's working.
The insurance.
Stumble in and pulp.
Very, very but, cool. It reminds me of my cousin. One of my cousins, Shelly.
Oh, I was like, your cousin used a lightning rod?
No. Oh, no, okay. Mine and my cousin, Shelly, in New Jersey. She has a photograph that she sent me of my grandmother's old house in Toms River, New Jersey.
Look at this photograph.
And in the window, you can see something, and I swear it looks like my grandmother's face looking out that window.
Probably is.
Crazy.
That's pretty wild.
Now, if you didn't know what she looked like, you probably wouldn't see it. And it's one of those things, like, if I look at the picture and I didn't know, I'd be like, what? I don't see anything. But once she points it out, it's like impossible not to see it, and you're like, oh, my God, that does look kind of like Tootsie.
And it's not like the pareidolia or whatever. You're saying it looks like her.
Yeah, if I showed you a photograph.
It doesn't just look like a person. It looks like her.
Yeah, it looks like her. It doesn't look like a person. It looks like her.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
In the house that she used to live in. So it's wild.
And that's not the first time. Look, there's stories on the internet everywhere and endless photographs of that exact thing. Of people doing that. Seeing some sort of crazy reflection or what looks like them looking out of a window in a home that they used to own.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that nothing happened. They woke up. He woke up, looked.
He was just checking in on the family.
Grandpa was like, what's up? And just walking right on through, just kind of keeping tabs on everything. And that was it.
Yeah. He's making sure his investment paid off.
That's right.
Right. He's making sure
everybody's
good.
You take care of it because it sounds like he's keeping an eye on everything.
Yeah,
don't
right.
Don't mess that
right,
up.
Right. You're tearing it up and you're not picking it up. Uh-uh. He's going to come back and do some bad stuff to you.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Don't do that.
Well, check this out. Yeah. Marty from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, lives in a haunted apartment building, and one day he hears something strange that he can't explain.
Oh, no.
Let's give it a listen.
Hi, this is Marty from Pittsburgh, PA. You can use my name on the show. I have a couple stories that I can tell you guys, but one I can tell you starting off is I live in an apartment with my wife and my roommate, who's also my cousin. And we've been living here for probably 7 years now, and our apartment's thoroughly haunted. We have a lot of things happen. My cousin has seen some, things in his bedroom specifically. It's usually just the things he's seen in his own bedroom. And I'll just tell you the most recent things that have happened to me. Most recently, we have a very set of stairs. It's a small staircase, and the staircase goes from the living room up into like our dining room area, but anytime anybody's on the staircase, you can hear them very clearly. Even our cats, when they run up and down the stairs, you can hear them running down up and down the stairs. Well, the one night, I work overnight and I was home alone. My roommate and my wife were both at work, and I was coming back down the stairs from being upstairs in the kitchen, and coming back downstairs, I can hear foot stomps coming down behind me. And they sounded like footsteps. They weren't like just a cat following me or anything like that. And I at first assumed it was, a cat coming, but it ultimately, wasn't. It was very loud stomps, like running down the stairs behind me, which startled me. But the one this actually happened a few days ago, I was home, and my wife was home, and she was actually in the shower, which is upstairs as well. And my cats follow her around the house. And so she was upstairs getting showered, bathroom doors closed, I could hear the shower running, and then she turns the shower off, and then I could hear her voice in our stairwell say, "Come on," and she was talking to the cats, and when I heard her say, "Come on," cats came running down the stairs before her, because she doesn't want to walk down where they go down, she doesn't want to step on them, whatever, and the cats come running down the stairs, and my wife doesn't follow, so I wait a second, 2 seconds, and I say, "Hey, babe," and she doesn't answer. And she doesn't answer because a moment later, I hear her open the bathroom door. She hadn't even come out of the shower yet. And she had to come out of the bathroom. So something that sounded like my wife, exactly like my wife, told our cat, "Come on," to like go down the stairs. And they went down the stairs and I heard this very clearly. I thought it was her. She didn't come down the stairs. But yeah, great show. I love you guys. I love the show. And appreciate everything you guys do. So I'll probably call back some other time with another story. Thank you.
And we're back.
Yikes.
This story reminds me a lot of the story you told. So he hears what he thinks is his wife calling out to the cats, but she's not there. But he distinctly
jokes
heard
on him.
You said you one time thought you
Man.
Heard your wife, and you heard her voice plain as day, and she wasn't even home.
I can still hear it. Just, yeah, it's the only thing I guess you could say that's really been like top of the list, really strange little thing that happened. But I understand now when people talk about it, how real it feels. Like it wasn't something that I imagined. You know, people are always like, "Well, maybe you just imagine that you heard her respond."
Right.
It's not that. It's like if I walked in the other room and responded to you, you didn't imagine that. It just happened. It was a very, very, very strange thing.
Mm.
But what could it be other than, like, I guess something in the house messing with you, some kind of little prankster or something? Like, otherwise, I mean, it's not like a leftover reverberation or echo of your essence.
Right.
At that one point. Otherwise, it would be going on all the time.
Yeah. I got another one here. Check this out. It says, my cousin used to live in northern Alabama, and his family had a polo field about 25 miles from the Tennessee state line. He had told me a couple of times back when he lived on the property that he'd seen this figure around his property, outside his windows, out in the field, stuff like that. But these were stories late at night on Xbox, and I never put too much thought into them. Flash forward to a trip. I went up to visit him in 2010. We went out camping on the polo field. It was a cool August night with a full moon, and we set up our tent and fire out in the middle of this field. We had made food and just talked and listened to some music when we started getting some strong, cold and hot winds. The area was known for tornadoes, so we decided to pack up and leave. We'd gotten most of the stuff back in the car, and I decided to lay up on top of one of the hay bales and just look at the night sky, because I hadn't seen a full night sky after moving to a city with a lot of light pollution in a while. After a couple of minutes, my cousin tells me he has packed and we're ready to go. So I hop up and look out across the field, and at the edge of the field, at the fence line, about 75 to 100 yards away, that's when I saw it. The human-like silhouette, standing right at the fence looking in our direction. I knew the fences were about 4 foot tall, and they were sitting above its waistline, so it appeared to be over 6 feet, nearly 7 foot tall. It looked human, but something seemed off. Its limbs were thin. Its eyes were reflective like that of an animal. I couldn't make out a lot of the facial features, but it just seemed flat, grayish, pale. The best way I could describe it was a mix between an emaciated human and the vampires from I Am Legend. I quickly hopped down and told my cousin to leave and explained what I saw after we got back to his parents. From what I described to him, it matches what he saw from 5 to 8 years prior when he was a kid. There are a few stories of his other friends seeing it around the woods a couple of years afterwards when they'd camp, but no one still really has an explanation of what it could be or what it is. We've looked into the area, and there was an old asylum abandoned from the late 80s and early 90s, but given the span of around 15 years, it was seen. We don't think it could be some weirdo living out there. Anyways, the best thing I could compare it to is we may have seen a pale crawler. Thanks for all you do, Derek.
Yikes.
Man, the pale crawlers. Yikes. I don't know why so many people are seeing them, but
I don't want to.
Terrifying. No, I don't either. I think it's something demonic.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I think it's just another form it takes.
I think it's just trying to mess with people.
Yeah.
Speaking of messing with people, pesky aliens, folks. Alien abductions, they're horrible. Let's take a break. When we get back from the break, I'm going to be talking about some alien abductions. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. The concept of individuals being forcibly taken from their homes, vehicles, and even schoolyards by enigmatic humanoid entities, then whisked away onto spacecraft, where they undergo invasive and menacing procedures, strikes at the core of our understanding of the universe. It's a notion so unsettling that it's often either dismissed outright or sensationalized in media accounts, challenging our very sense of reality. Understandably, the phenomenon of UFO abductions is met with skepticism, given its deeply disturbing nature and its clash with our established beliefs. Yet spanning 75 years, and likely beyond, a multitude of seemingly sincere and rational individuals, without any personal gain, have consistently recounted such harrowing experiences to those willing to lend an ear. What lies behind these reports? And why are there so many? Recent surveys indicate that possibly hundreds of thousands, if not more, could be categorized as abductees or experiencers. Who are these abductors, and what drives their actions? These are questions that persist, begging for answers. Let's start with the first publication of what you could call an alien abduction. The first publication of an alien abduction case occurred in January of 1965. The event had occurred in 1957 in Brazil. Antonio Vilas Boas was the son of a rancher. He was working on his father's farm at night when he saw a UFO land nearby. Four large-headed, small beings quickly came out of the object and forced Vilas Boas inside. They took off his clothes, spread a clear, odorless liquid all over his body, then cut his chin and collected some blood into a cup. Now, Vilas Boas claimed that a small, naked female being then entered the room. She had thin, blonde hair, large, slanted eyes, high cheekbones, and an ordinary nose, a small, thin-lipped mouth, and a sharply pointed chin. Her body looked human. Her feet were small, and her hands were long and pointed. She was about 4.5 feet tall. She began to hug and caress him. He became uncontrollably sexually excited. They had intercourse twice. Then the female being abruptly broke off their intimacy and left Vilas Boas
with the feeling that he was being treated like a good stallion to improve their stock. He was then let off of the object. To UFO researchers at the time, this report seemed ridiculous and lurid. It reeked of pulp science fiction. Having spent the better part of the 1950s battling the contactees, they did not need another outlandish case to complicate their job of winning scientific legitimacy for the phenomenon. But Villas-Boas's story and the actions did not match those of the contactees. He received no messages to relay to mankind. He had no mission that was ever given to him. He made no money from the story. He simply told his story and then retreated to the normal activities of his daily life. He eventually went to law school and became a respected attorney. He maintained the truthfulness of his account until the day he died. Now, while this case stood out for the next few years as an embarrassing anomaly, another case came along that was more difficult to dismiss. The Barney and Betty Hill case not only became a source of great debate, but it also ranks as perhaps the most important and well-known case in the history of the UFO phenomenon. It was the subject of a two-part story in Look magazine in 1966, a popular book in the same year, and a 1975 NBC television movie. The Hills said that while driving from Montreal to Portsmouth, New Hampshire, small beings with large heads and eyes abducted them from their car into a landed UFO. The beings separated them into different rooms and subjugated them to physical examinations. They inserted a needle into Betty's abdomen and told her that they were giving her a pregnancy test. They obtained scrapings of the Hill's skin and performed other psychological tests. A larger being, whom Betty thought was the leader, communicated with her telepathically. After the medical procedures were completed and after some other events happened, the Hills were allowed to exit from the object and got to watch its departure. They immediately forgot what happened to them, resumed their trip, and arrived home about 2 hours later than they should have. All they remembered was that they had observed a UFO close up. They recalled nothing of the abduction. Over the next few months, they were bothered by strange dreams of being on board an alien craft. When they suffered continual anxiety related to their UFO sighting, they sought help through psychological counseling. They were referred to a man named Benjamin Simon, a well-known psychiatrist proficient in hypnosis. Through the use of hypnotic regressions, they recovered the memories of what transpired that evening. Although John Fuller's 1966 book about the episode, titled Interrupted Journey, described the pregnancy test performed on Betty, he decided not to include the fact that the beings had extracted a sperm sample from Barney. This was too embarrassing for the Hills and for Fuller in the mid-1960s, and he did not mention it lest it distract from the veracity of the account. The Hills story broke like a thunderbolt in the UFO research community. They were an interracial couple whose credibility was above reproach. Barney Hill was a member of the NAACP and the New Hampshire Civil Rights Commission, and Betty Hill was a social worker. They were respected, church-going members of their community. This was not the type of couple who liked to attract lunatic fringe attention to themselves. But did the events, as the Hills described them, actually happen? Researchers have no way of really knowing. The Hill case split the UFO research community. Many UFO researchers agreed with University of Arizona atmospheric physicist James E. McDonnell when he complained that because of the relationship to the contactee stories, the Hill case put UFO research back 20 years. But like the Villas-Boas case, the Hills account seemed to be unrelated to the 1950s-style contactee claims. The Hills were not concerned with making money from the tale, although they received money from the publication of the book. Nor did they ever embellish and change the story as time went on. They did not receive a mission from the Space Brothers. They did not say that they were chosen for any particular reason. They were not members of a flying saucer cult. In fact, until his initial sighting, Barney had been hostile to the idea that UFOs even existed.
a crucial aspect of the Hill case, was that their information was retrieved through the use of hypnosis. Now, Benjamin Simon, the psychiatrist who administered the hypnosis, was never convinced that an abduction had actually occurred. He preferred to think that the two had experienced a shared fantasy, or a condition known as folie à deux, even though the details of their fantasies were quite different because they had been put in separate rooms and had different experiences. The transcripts of the hypnosis showed that Simon spent a considerable amount of time unsuccessfully trying to get the Hills to admit that the events had never really happened, or to catch them in some kind of contradiction. But he never did. After the Hill case, other reports of abductions slowly began to surface, but the number was still so small that they caused very little comment among UFO researchers. They represented an anomaly outside the more conventional sighting reports that dominated the field. Yet the abduction claims persisted. In October 1973, two residents of Pascagoula, Mississippi, said that strange-looking aliens floated them into a UFO and physically examined them. In 1975, forest worker Travis Walton claimed that he was taken aboard a UFO, and while he thought he was gone for a few hours, he appeared to be missing for 5 days. Inside the object, he remembered lying on a table and seeing small beings with very large heads and eyes. That same year, an Army sergeant saw a UFO headed for him while he sat on the hood of his car. A numbness, he said, spread all over his body before the object. In January 1976, three women in Kentucky observed a bright red object hovering some distance from their car. The next thing they knew, they were 8 miles down the road, and it was an hour and a half later. They continued home and experienced burning sensations on their faces when water touched them. They then noticed that they had similar red marks on the backs of their necks. Hypnosis was administered by Leo Sprinkle, a professor of counseling, psychology at the University of Wyoming, an early investigator of alien abductions. The three women remembered being physically examined by small, gray, humanoid figures while they lay on tables. One woman felt that they were conducting an experiment on her to learn about her emotional and intellectual processes. Another woman could see a human she didn't know lying on a table next to hers. In 1977, a 10-year-old report came to light in Massachusetts. Betty Andreessen claimed that she and her family were put in a state of suspended animation when five small beings entered their home by walking through a wall. She was taken to a bizarre location where, among other things, she was examined, saw strange animals on another planet, and saw a giant phoenix-like bird rising from ashes. She also reported various events that she interpreted as profoundly religious. Now, UFO investigator Ray Fowler wrote 3 books on her experiences, but the events were so bizarre that UFO researchers were at a loss to separate reality from fantasy. Now, I'm lucky enough, I've met Travis Walton, and I got to speak to him. I've talked on the phone, we interviewed Betty Andreessen. If you go back, you can find that interview. I've spoken to these people, and although they are really bizarre, they're quite credible. I've met Whitley Strieber. I've talked to so many other people that aren't even famous about their UFO abductions. And whether it happened or not, it has affected their lives tremendously. That's what me and Cam always say on the show. It doesn't matter if you really saw Bigfoot or you really saw an alien gray or a rake. It doesn't matter if it was physical or it was real, but the effect it has on you is exactly the same. So why get caught up arguing, you know, that person's a liar? We take on all stories and we love to hear them. Back to the UFO abductions, though. By the late 1970s and early 1980s, alien abduction accounts began to be reported in ever-increasing numbers. They just picked up, folks. Even in the movies, you started seeing it more and more. Some researchers were beginning to theorize about apparent reproductive link that recurred in these accounts. As early as 1972, researcher Major Ree Fish hypothesized that a needle inserted into Betty Hill's navel might have been for experimentation with human eggs. And in 1977, psychiatrist Berthold Schwartz discussed the idea of laparoscopy, a method of examining internal organs by using a viewing scope. Being performed, that's what they were using on Betty. Based on cases that she investigated, in 1980, researcher Ann Druffel suggested that aliens might be interested in human sexual lifestyles. But no one really knows. Going from a normal environment into a UFO can be a shattering experience. People are engaged in normal activities when suddenly they're removed from their surroundings against their will and taken into the fringes of reality. The abductors seem to make a conscious effort to take people when they will not be missed or when their lives will not be overly disrupted. That still allows a wide range of opportunities for an abduction. An unsuspecting woman is in her room, preparing to go to bed. She gets into bed, reads a while, turns off the light, and drifts off into a peaceful night's sleep. In the middle of the night, she turns over and lies on her back. She is awakened by a light that seemed to be glowing in her room. The light moves toward her bed and takes the shape of a small man with a bald head and huge black eyes. She's terrified. She wants to run, but she cannot move. She wants to scream, but she cannot speak. The man moves toward her and looks deeply into her eyes. Suddenly, she is calmer, and she knows that the man is not going to hurt her. This is a typical beginning of an alien abduction. Virtually all abductees have experienced this. From the first few seconds of an abduction, nothing is within the realm of normal human experiences. It is an instant descent into the fantastic and the bizarre. Technology, biotechnology, that seem like magic are immediately apparent. Once the events begin, humans are powerless to stop it. And when it's over, most victims cannot remember it. Oftentimes, the abductee forms a screen memory that masks the beginning of an abduction event. For example, one abductee said she saw a wolf in her bedroom one night. She said the wolf was just standing squarely on her bed, looking at her in her eyes. She clearly remembered its fur, its fangs, and especially the eyes. Other abductees have claimed to have seen monkeys, owls, deer, and other animals. Some say that they've seen an angel. Some say they've seen a devil. Through the use of hypnosis to recover the details of these events, each of these cases turned out to be the beginning of an abduction sequence. It is common for abductees to refer to out-of-body experiences that they had, or more commonly, that they succeeded in preventing at what was the beginning of an abduction. They sometimes remember that they felt themselves floating out of bed, but then fought it and were able to lower themselves back onto the bed and abort the experience. Now that is some useful information, folks. That's something that not a lot of shows are going to hit you with. I'm dropping the hot lasagna on you. I'm telling you, if you feel like you're being floated out of your bedroom, fight it. You can fight it and go back to bed. Don't let these suckers steal you in the middle of the night, right? This is important. Pay attention. Secrecy, they say, appears to be critically important to these aliens in determining the opportunities for abductions. They commonly take place when the abductees are in an automobile, alone in the daytime or at night, or with a small group of people. Victims have reported aliens doing procedures on them in their homes without even being taken up to their craft. The majority of the abductions, however, begin at night when the victim is alone, either awake or asleep, and no abductions have surfaced that took place in the middle of a very large group of people in full view at a public event, like a shopping mall, something like that. The greater the victim's seclusion and the less others will miss them, the longer the experience tends to last. If a person is alone and is not likely to be missed for hours, they will experience more events during the abduction. Similarly, an abduction of a person walking alone in a secluded place will last longer than an abduction originating in a small group of people. Most abductions last from 1 to 3 hours. Now, nighttime presents an ideal time for alien abduction. During the night, it's just scarier, right? The abductee's disappearance has a greater chance of going unnoticed, and the aliens can maintain maximum cover. Also, if the abductee is asleep, the event can become concealed as part of a dream, although the dream may be much more vivid and have a different quality than usual, it is still within the acceptable cognitive realm. At the beginning of the nighttime abduction, the beings usually enter the room through a light source coming from the window. Now, how the use of light can transform and transport matter isn't really known. The frightened victim is calmed when the beings, you know, come into the room. They get close to you and they stare into your eyes. Now, a small being usually then would touch your shoulder or arm. You would find yourself floating up and out of bed. You are drawn to the light and enveloped in it. You would float towards the light. Small beings are often with you. Then, without hesitation, you and your escorts go directly through the closed window to the outside. You would have no particular physical sensation when passing through the window. Although abductees frequently report going directly through walls and ceilings, the beings appear to seek out a window for some reason. Sometimes the aliens will take abductees out of their bedrooms and into another room and then out through a window there. What is it about the window? I don't know. Windows that are blocked, for example, with boxes or after a move are avoided in favor of an unblocked window. Now, one woman was visiting friends with her son. They slept in two different rooms in the basement. An abduction sequence began, and the aliens took her out of her bed and walked her into her son's room. Then they took her son and walked both of them into the bathroom. They wondered why they were crowding into this bathroom, and then she realized that the bathroom was the only room in the basement with a window. Soon, a bright light entered, and they flew out of the window. In spite of hundreds of accounts of people flying through closed windows, it is exceedingly rare to find an outside witness who has observed it. Therefore, although it sounds impossible, the physical mechanism that allows people to pass through solid objects probably renders them invisible, at least for this part of the abduction sequence. In his amazing book, David M. Jacobs wrote Secret Life, First-Hand Documented Accounts of UFO Abductions. He talks that he first met a woman named Barbara Archer in 1987. She was a petite 21-year-old university student who was studying to be a journalist. She was overwhelmed with fear and anxiety when she remembers snippets of a bizarre event that dominated her life. During the course of her 6 hypnosis sessions with me, he says that she was able to recall vividly her extraordinary experiences. One night when she was 16 years old, she was getting ready to go to bed when she noticed a light coming in through her window. When she closed the shade, the light continued to illuminate the entire room. She looked outside and could not see the source of the light. During a hypnosis session, she remembered what happened in the beginning of the event. I asked her how she felt when she saw the light. Well, she said, I think when I first realized that it was light in my room, it made me feel scared, but like I couldn't figure it out why. So I asked her, so you were puzzled? Yeah, I should look out the window because I could see more of the sky, but I just didn't. There's all this light still. I started to feel like I would sit there for a while and I would look out the window and then I would turn around because I think that there might be somebody there. I first thought that it might be the dog. After a while, I just stopped looking out the window because there's nothing there to see. So I asked her, do you sort of look back in, though? Can you get the sense that, well, the light seems to be going away now. It's not filling the whole room as much anymore. When I turn around, there's somebody standing over by the closet. I asked her, is this a big person, a medium person, a little person? She said, no, he's smaller than me. I'm not all that shocked to see him standing there. I think he came toward me when I was standing there by the window. I think he touches my arm. He sort of touches me around my wrist area, between my elbow and my wrist, sort of. It feels better then. I mean, I'm not scared or anything now. So I asked her, when he touches your wrist, what happens next? Well, I turn around towards the window again, the side window that I had been looking out of. I just sort of go up. And I asked, okay, is this through the shade? Yes, yes. I think I left the shade down. I don't remember putting it up anyway. And we just go out. Oh, I feel so dizzy. It feels terrible. I asked, do you get the sense that you're going horizontally? She said, no, I'm going up. It's straight up like an elevator. Yeah, it's straight up. I asked her, can you get a sense of movement or do you just feel that you're going up? She said, I feel sort of like I'm on an elevator, except there's no walls or anything around us. It's just up, and we're going fast. I asked her, can you see anything outside? She said, when we went out the window, we went straight in between the two row houses, my house and my next door neighbor's. The houses go back a little bit, and there's like a room in there where my bedroom and the bedroom across from me is sort of, it just goes back, like a little cove sort of thing. And I go straight up from in between there. So I can see everything. I can see all the row houses on my street. I can see the driveway. Oh, I'm starting to feel really nauseous now. I hope I don't get sick. Now at this point, I assured Barbara that the feeling would subside and she would not get sick. I said, can you get a sense of if you're headed toward a specific point or not? She said, no. All I know is we're going straight up. I looked down and I saw the trees and everything on my street. And it makes me feel kind of scared because I don't really like heights. But not scared. But it just makes this nauseous feeling a little bit worse, I think. But then after we're just going straight up, I know that we're going to some place. I asked her, do you get a sense of the weather? Can you feel any breezes? Is it cold? Do you get a sense of being outside? She said, no, it doesn't feel cold or anything. Just kind of feels like body temperature. I asked, do you get a sense that you might be enclosed in something? Is something protecting you from the weather? She said, no, not that I can tell. I can't feel anything or touch anything. I'm just continuing to go up. I asked, do you see yourself approaching anything? Yeah. When I look up, I can see the bottom of kind of a big, I think it's roundish, but longer though. It's like an oval maybe. I can see the bottom, sort of gray, dark gray. I said, is this thing big or is it small? Or are you a little too far away to get the sense? She said, no, it's big, but it's not huge. I can remember from before that it's not that big. I said, do you sort of get closer to it then? She said, mm-hmm. It feels like there's sort of light around me, that we're following up, and we're getting closer to the point of where that's coming from, inside that big thing. I said, are you heading towards the center of it or off to the side? She said, yeah, the center, underneath. We just go right through the bottom. I had to ask, is there another person still with you? She said, yes, I think he's still here. And when we get there, there's somebody else waiting for us inside. Wow, right? What a crazy description. I've never heard it told in the first person like that, of being taken out of the window and up, up, up. Man, that's got to be a bizarre experience. Now, that's how it usually goes down when you're at home, you know, in your bedroom. But people don't just get abducted from their homes, no. Sometimes they're in an automobile. And an abduction from a car usually begins with a UFO sighting. The abductee may be driving alone when suddenly they see a strange object flying through the air or even hovering off on the side of the road. The victim pulls over and gets out, ostensibly to take a better look at it. Then, for no apparent reason, you would walk towards the object, now on the ground. As the person gets closer, they notice that the small beings are apparently waiting for them near the craft. The person is usually not necessarily frightened, but they are always a little uneasy. Yet, they cannot stop walking towards them. It's like they've got your mind controlled it. Did I just say controlled it? Mind controlled. She comes up to these beings and they escort the person into the object. Now, if it's a woman, for example, if she's driving and spots an object that appears to land out of view, she might stop the car and walk to an area off the road with trees or heavy foliage, where she thinks the object has landed. She comes to a clearing where a small being usually joins her, and they walk for a short distance towards a UFO resting on the ground, and they eventually enter it. If the person is in the car with other people, the aliens switch off the non-targeted individuals. For example, several people are riding at night, and the abductee is one of the passengers. Suddenly, they spot a strange light in the sky that kind of gives off an eerie glow and begins to move closer and closer to them. Inexplicably, the driver pulls the car over to the side of the road and stops. The UFO shines a light directly onto them. The abductee is excited and frightened. She yells at the driver to keep going, but it's too late. The driver and other people in the car have vacant looks on their faces, and their heads are leaning against the window or the seat. The victim now realizes in horror that their friends are unconscious. Their perceptions and information processing have been disrupted, and they no longer are in control of their senses, memories, or their wills. Then, a light beam that was shining on the car takes on a different character. It has a physically compelling or pulling effect on the abductee. Her consciousness is altered, and it's difficult for her to understand what is happening. And before she realizes it, she floats up off her seat and heads directly through the windshield, and up and up, she would ascend as if she were on an invisible elevator until she reaches the UFO. Now, Will Parker, a computer programmer, was driving with his first wife, Ginny, through Virginia late one night in 1974. He inexplicably pulled into a closed gas station in a small town, turned off the motor and the lights, and waited in the darkness. A hypnosis session with Dr. David Jacobs 14 years later revealed why he had performed this seemingly inexplicable act. He didn't have any reason why. He just decided to pull over on the side of the road. It's like something was just compelling him to do so. And isn't that odd that they can just find a person, they can see you driving, and they can somehow tap into your brain and start giving you, pushing you, like, hey man, pull over, pull over. He said that we were just sitting there and I kept thinking, I don't know why I'm waiting, and I don't even know what I'm waiting for. He said there's nothing out here. He said that he was just sitting there talking with his wife at the time, and he didn't really know, and she didn't seem to know either why they were pulling over, and she just kept telling me, be quiet, I think I hear something. So I said, okay, I don't see anything. I'm looking around, I don't know, I didn't hear anything, but she said she did. So Dr. Jacobs asked Will, does she hear a noise that's coming from the front, the back, or the side? She didn't say. She just said she thought she heard something. She didn't say what kind of noise. She said she was sure she saw some light. And I asked her, while you were sitting there or before? Before. She said that there's someone out there. And I said, what is it? He said, yeah, I see them. Ginny, she's shocked. She's praying. And I said, what do you see? A little guy. He's outside the car, and he's not human. He ought to be cold because he hasn't got a coat on. I've seen this before, but I didn't remember it until now. Now Ginny is quiet. I'm turning to her, but she's asleep. That's what she is. Her eyes are closed. And right here, Dr. Jacobs knows that his wife is placed unconscious by these beings. But Will, he's not unconscious, which means he's the one that they're after. He's the one they're going to get. He said, no, they're not, but she looks like she's drifting off. Now they've got me out of the car. And I had to ask him, this is Dr. Jacobs, do you open the car door or do they? And Will said, I don't remember. I don't think I opened it. Now I'm out of the car, and she's sitting in the car. I keep thinking I want to lock it up, but I can't get to the car. I don't want anyone to get into her. I don't want anyone to grab her because she's all by herself. I had to ask, does she get out of the car also? And Will said, no, she's asleep. They don't take her out of the car. No, I keep thinking I don't want them to take me away from the car, but I'm afraid she's going to be scared when she wakes up and I'm not there for her. We're going around the building. It's dark now. There are a bunch of them. I asked, how many do you think there are? 4 or 5? Maybe. It's weird. I'm saying, where are the rest? But they don't say anything to me. I asked him, when you talk to them, are you verbalizing? Will said, I'm not sure. I think so, but it's like they're not talking back to me. But they told me that they'll bring me back and that they're not going to hurt me. I'm not scared anymore. I'm more like surprised, but I'm not scared. I'm scared for Ginny because I don't know how she's going to. I don't know how she's going to remember. They told me she's not going to remember. Now, the beings took Will around to the back of the service station where they all stood around in a tight group. He said, we're just in the back of the building. It's dark. And I said, are you behind the building? We're all behind the building. We're just standing there like in a group. Do they say what they're waiting for? What's happening? Will said, I don't know what they're waiting for. They're waiting to be picked up, I guess, but it's here. It's not very big. It's bigger than the building, but it's not huge. We're going underneath it. It's like it's opening up, but I don't see a door. It's just like opening. We're going up inside. I asked him, how do you go up inside? Will said, I'm not sure. It's like we're on an elevator, but it's open. I'm not sure. We were on the ground a moment ago. Now we're inside. It's like we're being lifted up, but nothing grabbed a hold of me. I can still see the ground and earth underneath, but it's closing off. I can't see it that well anymore. It's not all that bright inside either. It's kind of dark. Wow. What a crazy scenario. These beings, whatever they are... And listen, people ask me all the time about the UFO stuff. I'm not saying they're from another planet. I don't understand what they are or where they're from. But I think it's odd that they can pick people out. Like, they picked Will out of a car in, out in the road alone at night, and they didn't have any interest in his wife. They just wanted him. You know, I think that a lot of these cases, people are abducted starting when they're children, and it just continues and continues throughout their life. And you may not remember the first 10 times you're abducted, but maybe the 11th you did. Because I've also read about stories where the aliens get it wrong. Like, they botched the abduction. They somehow screwed it up. It's crazy, crazy. There was another woman that Dr. Jacobs interviewed, and her name was Patty Lane. And she was 20 at the time, and this place took place, in 1982. So this is what he says about it. He says, Patty waited for a while in her car. She didn't have any idea why, but she felt compelled to pull over on the side of the road. There was no one else on the road, so she pulled over and waited. And she even talked about how she didn't know why she was waiting or what she was waiting for. She just felt the strong urge to sit there calmly and wait. Then she said, her car door opened. She was taken out, and the abduction began. Now, in spite of the alien's ability to make non-targeted people unconscious during an abduction, entire cars, abductees, and other passengers as well have been lifted up off the road and taken on board a UFO. In 1979, Tracy Knapp, another woman, was driving from Los Angeles to Las Vegas with two girlfriends when they spotted a strange light swooping down towards them. I said, do you see it approaching the car a little bit closer then? She said, mm-hmm, but fast, not slow. It seemed like it dropped down by the window too, like whizzed by. So it whizzes by. What happens next? That's what I asked her. Tracy suddenly became upset. And I said, are you okay? How are you doing, Tracy? What are you thinking? She said that the car, it's spinning around. I said, you get a sense of movement? She said, yeah, like I'm in a teacup. Like I'm spinning, like the car's turning. I'm grabbing onto the seat and we're all screaming. I said, all three of you? She said, uh-huh. Tracy was now crying and so Dr. Jacobs tried to calm and reassure her. And after a short time, she was able to continue. I said, so you get the feeling that you're spinning around. Therefore, I would assume that you're not on the ground. Or am I wrong? Are you still on the ground? She said, no, we're not on the ground. I said, do you get the sensation of moving up or sideways or diagonal? Or can you even tell? She says, it's like we're being spun up, like we're moving forward and getting spun, and I'm holding on to the car. I asked her, how do you feel physically? Do you feel dizzy or anything like that? She said, there's a force, a pressure, very heavy, like I'm weak, I'm weighted. I said, do you say anything to your friends or is everybody too alarmed? She said, I can't talk. Nothing's being said at this point. I said, what are your friends doing in the front seat? Are they looking at each other? Are they animated or not? Or can you even tell? She said, they're not. They're going limp. I said, are you going limp also? Or just sort of observing them going limp? She said, I'm not going limp. I don't feel like I'm going limp at all. I see or feel myself. I have one hand on the door and one hand on the car seat, and I'm looking out the window, watching this whole thing and wondering what's going on. So I had to ask her, what happens next? They just leave them alone. It's me. And they're taking me out of the car. It seems like the window's open, and they put their hands through the window, and they touched me. And then at that point, I'm back now. I said, you're back against the seat? Yeah, I'm laid back now, and I'm getting limp then. And then I see a hand coming through the window, and they were touching me, and I'm feeling limp now. And they open the door, and I feel like I'm being picked up and out of there. The beings took Tracy out of the car. She lost sight of her girlfriends until the three of them were back on the ground in the car. And again, they didn't want her girlfriends. For whatever reason, she was selected. So how are they selecting people without having done any physical tests on them? What are they looking for? A rare blood type? Something like that? Or had Tracy previously been abducted as a child, and they know exactly who she is. She's got some kind of a tracking device on her, and they periodically pick her up. I don't know. It's a very scary situation. Alien abduction is one of the things that scares me the most. I remember reading books as a kid, trying to formulate plans on what I could do to stop myself from being abducted. You know, if I'd ever, could I sleep inside of a bank vault? Things like that. I don't know. But like I mentioned earlier, have a room with no windows in it. Yes, it's against fire code. But would you rather burn up in a house or be abducted by aliens? I'm not sure which one is worse. Let's take a break. I'm Kyle Filson. This is Expanded Perspectives. Expanded Perspectives. I got a lot more I could get into, and I will get into in future episodes about alien abduction. It's a fascinating topic.
Well, especially now that it's basically, we know it's all fact.
Yeah. I mean,
we know there's something out there.
I think it is. And the sad, and I tried to give you a pointer. Like, I know it's a fire hazard, but if you don't want to be abducted by aliens, you should build a house with no windows in it. That may not totally deter them, that it'll go a long way in deterring them, because for some reason they need windows to teleport you in and out of your house. So listen, every little step helps, right?
I would like to know, can you like line it with lead?
I don't know.
Is it like, is metal better than brick or better than wood or siding? Like, is there a difference?
But if the fire breaks out, yeah, you're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. Well, then if you build a home with no windows, then it has to have fire suppression system in it.
That's what I'm saying. Can't you get like a super industrial grade fire suppression system, like they have industrial kitchens and stuff? Like,
but you would also, before you would invest that much money, you would have to actively know you had a problem with alien abduction. You don't want to like forwardly invest all of it and like, I've never been abducted, but.
I would. If I had the money, I would totally do that.
You would then you might as well, like, instead of building a house like that, you just build an underground home.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
You just go live in a cave. Darren Kuyu was hiding from alien abductions.
That's right.
That's what it was for.
We thought it was from an asteroid. Turns out it was alien abduction.
It was just hiding from the alien. That's all it was for. Speaking of something unsettling, our brother from another mother, Mr. Lon, knows how to do it upright with the headlines. He loves to mess with me. And look, I'm down for it. Y'all know it. Y'all know how much Kyle loves it. So I've got you one here, Philly, that I think you're going to enjoy.
Okay.
You prepared?
I'm prepared as I can be.
Does a hyena crocodile hybrid cryptid stalk the streets of Belize City?
A hyena crocodile
hybrid.
How is that even possible?
I don't know. And I'm not asking how it was made. I'm just asking why it was there.
But aren't there like ancient cave paintings that they found that the Anunnaki were experimenting with different animal hybrids?
Specifically hyena crocodiles.
Well, I mean, maybe they're still up to it. You're right. They're still mixing it.
They're still up to it.
Or there's some crazy doctor like the Island of Dr. Moreau.
I like to believe so.
And they're like, you know, they're using CRISPR and other things and they're splicing together DNA sequences.
I like where this is going.
Whatever crazy combination they can think of. And they're like, I got an idea. You know, hyenas got a strong bite force, right? And so do crocodiles. Let's combine them.
Yeah.
See what we can make ourselves.
Let's see what happens.
You know, like there's somebody's out there trying to create bebop and rock steady.
This is
you
fact.
Know what I'm saying?
This is fact. Yeah.
All right. Let's hear it.
So this is what Lon writes. It says, a Belize City resident contacted me about a horrible looking creature that is said to roam the dark streets at night, killing pets and scaring others. Any idea what this is? This is the following account he has received. It says, "Hello, sir. Says, I once saw something that terrified me, and it was not a crawler. It was in Belize City, Belize, and it looked like some kind of horrible hyena-crocodile hybrid. I saw it from a distance, about 50 yards away. I'm going to stop right there and say that is not far enough away.
How far?
50 yards.
No, that's too close.
That's way too close. But clearly, and for an extended moment, with a park bench for size reference. Adults had no idea what I was talking about, but the kids enthusiastically confirmed that there was a monster that kept killing street dogs that they played with, and that if you had a dog you liked, make sure you brought him off the street at night. And for decades, it was a true and honest mystery to me. Chupacabra? I don't know. Then, like last week, I saw a picture of a hairless, melanistic, speculated bear? And like, that's my monster. It makes no sense that one would be in Belize City. They only live in isolated regions nowhere near Belize and still in South America. But it makes way more sense than me having seen some kind of extraterrestrial goat vampire. Says a very believable scenario to me would be that it was a legitimate zoo or circus animal that had been released and it was out or in the jungle for fear of getting other animals sick, and then it naturally entered the city to find a way to live, scavenging garbage it encountered. While doing that, it encountered dogs, and being a bear, it defended its trash or its garbage where the food was, realizing that dogs were a pretty readily available calorie source in the process.
This is
anyway, my point is that it's got to be some real thing behind this mystery. Thanks, P. My thing right now when you get into that is this. Or is that how you justify what you saw?
Or you lost your mind.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, Belize. I don't know if everybody there is trustworthy. Isn't that where John McAfee was spending his time?
Probably
over there when he was doing all that Bolivian marching powder? Maybe this guy's whacked out on toot and thinks he saw a hybrid hyena crocodile defending hot trash from local dogs. That's
so
a bit of a stretch.
That he was hanging out in the park doing some bumps, and then he did a little key bump, and then he's out on the swing set and he thinks he sees this.
How else could you explain it?
Well,
I've never been to Belize. I know my cousin Aaron, he went to Belize. I'll have to ask him.
My wife's been to Belize.
Did she see anything on there?
I don't think so. She didn't. If she brought it up, or if she said I wasn't paying attention.
I think of Belize, but I've never been there. I think it's a beautiful place. I've seen some photographs. But I also think of like a lot of human trafficking goes on there, a lot of drug deals, a lot of shady stuff.
You think some bad
things
Which
might be
now?
The perfect place to build a lab to create
animal hybrids.
Yeah.
And if you were going to be snatching people off the streets, you've got endless sorts of people you could turn into. Animal hybrids.
Like they used to do in Argentina after World War II. They would just steal kids and then create crazy scientific experiments.
Montauk Chronicles.
Yeah, exactly.
Whole Montauk thing. Maybe this isn't just, I don't know, just the idea of seeing a hairless bear
that's
and all
it.
Of a sudden that's it. That's the problem. I don't know. I hope so, but I don't know.
You've convinced me. Now I think some ex-Nazi scientists relocated after World War II to Belize. They set up a secret laboratory.
I like where this is going.
And they've been building animal hybrids, human-animal hybrids, and whatever.
They're planning
on the rising of the Fourth Reich, and they use hybrid hyena crocodile army men. Yeah.
Well,
that's what we're going with.
Wasn't there like the whole story, remember, where it was like a whole island of crocodiles that the Japanese soldiers during World War II was allegedly got like hundreds of them devoured
by
those crocodiles. I need to look into that. I need to find out about that story.
Speaking of creepy, Devin from Washington sees what can only be described as the guy from Jeepers Creepers in a soybean field in Missouri one evening. Let's give it a listen.
Hello, Cam and Kyle. This is Devin from Washington. I am calling about a experience that I had back in, let's see, I believe it would have been 2010, roughly. Anyways, I was in a group home, and you can share my name, by the way. I was in a group home in a town or a city called Martin City. It's a suburb of Kansas City. It's in Missouri, and I was there at a group home. I had ran away. I was not a very good kid back at that time, but I had ran away from the group home, and I was basically living in the woods on the run, and I was in the woods one night. It was roughly about, I would say, midnight or later, and I was walking through the woods. I came across a soybean field. I had walked out into the soybean field, or was starting to walk out into the soybean field, when I had seen a herd of deer, whitetail. They were eating the soybeans, and they didn't notice me, but I noticed them. They seen something across the soybean field, and I had stopped and just kind of stood in the edge of the woods, and what I seen was a creature, looked like a man. I couldn't see a whole lot of definition, but he was wearing a trench coat with a wide brim hat, just like the character in Jeepers Creepers, looked identical. And I was sitting there watching this, and the deer scattered, they took off, and this entity or creature or whatever it is kind of crouched down. A giant pair of wings had spread out, and he leaped into the air, and the wings spread out wide, flapped down really hard. I could hear the whoosh from the air being pushed down, and he had lifted up and flew away from me across the woods on the other side of the soybean field. And I had watched this thing fly away until I couldn't see it anymore. To this day, I have no idea what it was. I guess supposedly there's a thing in Kansas City that's called the winged demon, from what I understand. And I don't know if that's what I seen or what, but I don't really tell a whole lot of people this story, and most people, I don't think, would honestly believe me, but it has stuck with me for quite some time, going on almost 20 years now. It has stuck with me, and I'll never forget that night. Anyways, I love your guys' show. It's awesome. You can either play this on your show or read it or whatever you want to do. I appreciate everything you guys do, and I love your guys' show. Have a wonderful day.
And there we go.
Yikes.
Just like the movie. So,
hey, look, maybe it's a soybean field. Maybe he's just hunting for big bucks. Big bucks do love them some soybean.
And he did say there were white-tailed deer in the field. The white-tailed deer is what spotted the creeper.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
A winged monster.
What
could that be? He saw the wings. He saw it take off. It's like a gargoyle wearing a hat. And again, wearing a hat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It makes, again,
it must have flown to Klein's Corner to get the hat.
That's true.
And the duster.
That's true. And then flew
back to Missouri. Nobody knows what we're talking about.
No,
there's a gas station in Klein's Corner.
And if you're going down Interstate 40 between Texas and New Mexico, and you get in there, like, it's before you turn up off of 40 to go to Santa Fe, New Mexico, there's a gas station there called Klein's Corner, and it's got everything.
It does.
It's got leather cowboy hats. It's got leather dusters. It's got all the crazy stuff that you could imagine, the fun, wild, it's in that store.
Yeah, I mean, you could get
that store's probably been there, I don't know, about 1,700 years. I mean, I don't know how long.
You can get anything you want there, yeah. Folks. You can get a pocket watch. You can get a boomerang. You can get a kazoo. I mean, they got everything.
They got it all there. Whole thing. There's another store right before you get to it off of 40 that's got fireworks. I stopped there and had to buy some fireworks. Here's awesome. We don't get fireworks year round in Texas, but New Mexico does. You just go up there and buy my fireworks.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
All I bought was like some little black cat stuff. It wasn't anything cool. It was just to make noise. But I wonder, instead of talking about seeing it with a hat, could this be, you know, when people report seeing like black eyed adults?
Yeah.
Could that be what their next phase is?
Yeah, possibly.
You know what I mean? Like, because the way they're seeing them already, they're dressed like, what was Jeepers Creepers doesn't need a hat? But yet in the movie, he's got a hat and a duster too. And all
he
that
has
stuff.
A truck.
And so he's, who changes the oil in the Jeepers Creepers truck? Who keeps the battery charged while he's sleeping for 30 years?
26 years, right?
Right? So who does that?
It's a good question.
I don't know.
Maybe he has a familiar or something that's in charge of taking care of all that stuff while he sleeps.
I'll tell you a movie I watched again the other day that doesn't hold up, speaking of familiars. The original Fright Night.
Oh, okay. Hold on. I'm trying to remember.
There you go.
Is this the one where the neighbor moves in, he's a vampire, and then I'm trying to think of the Sherlock Holmes looking guy that's like a monster killer.
Yes. McDowell.
Yeah. I remember that movie.
Yeah.
Did they do a remake?
Yeah, they did. I don't know that I've seen it. Have I seen like a part of it or whatnot? But I watched the original one again. And because you and I just had on in the background Silver Bullet not long ago in here in the studio.
Now that's a good movie. Yeah.
And it's still fun, right? We were always laughing about how fast the go-kart is or the wheelchair go-kart is. And he's not wearing a helmet. The kid's just streaking down the highway, right? Fright Night just doesn't hold up.
No, it's pretty lame.
But I do still love the idea. The story is great. It's just the movie. It's just not near as scary as I remember it when I was a kid.
Yeah, well, and just like Silver Bullet, the book, which is Cycle of the Werewolf, is way better than the show. But the show is still pretty good.
Yeah,
but I enjoy it. The story is a really good idea.
Yes. You know, I think it's the same way with Antlers. That short story was amazing. The movie maybe didn't portray it the way it would have been better. I don't know. But the story idea behind it is great.
Yeah. Speaking of stories, if you got any good stories and you want to share with me and Cam, as well as the listeners, you can email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com, or you can call into the show, just like the guys did today, 888-393-2783. That's 888-393-BRUD.
That's right.
And we would love to hear your stories. Yeah. We got some big news coming up. We can't talk about it today, but we're going to be releasing it very soon. We're going somewhere, folks, and you can come see us. So it's going to be pretty cool.
It'll be fun.
I can't wait for that. Cam, what do you got planned for the rest of your week?
I'm going to see the girls.
That's right.
I'm going to the Veronicas. I've got to go check out and check on Lisa and Jess and see how they're doing, watch them play a little music, take the fam, go over there and check all that stuff out. So we'll be heading to Dallas.
That sounds awesome. I don't really have much planned, just lots of work and continuing of watching the Stanley Cup Finals, or playoffs, that is. It's not the finals yet, but the first round of the playoffs. I'll be doing that. And
this is always the way it is. We get things planned, and then your work seems to know.
It always does.
It's like, are you planning on going out of town? Because that's when it usually happens.
I am. I'm going in June to Alabama, so I can already foresee a problem arising between now and then, right?
Yeah. 100%.
That's the way it is. I'd rather have too much work to do than not enough to do.
Facts.
I hope everybody out there has a good week. Till next time, I'm Kyle.
He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.